I believe there's a hero in all of us.
You have great powers, only some of which you have as yet discovered.
I'm a superhero.
A real life superhero.
The world needs extraordinary. We will make you a superhero.
Are you ready to become the hero?
Initiating surprise in three.
This,
two,
is
one.
The Real Brian Show.
It's Friday. You ready to have some fun today? I know I am. Well, happy July 4th tomorrow. You know, I know there's not really many fireworks happening this year, so instead, we'll show you some fireworks. Yeah.
Wait, is that even allowed on this show, dude?
Maybe not. Yeah. It actually might be censored and considered illegal.
Yeah, most states do have a firework ban, except Wyoming. They never ban fireworks.
You gotta come down here with an attitude, acting all big and bad. And what the hell is that smell? I could have been at a barbecue.
Happy Independence Day, fools. Let's rock it. All right, so does that movie just make you want to party?
Dude, that reminded me how much of a fool I felt after I went to see that on opening night in 1994.
Wow, that was 96, yeah. Though.
Oh, I thought it was 94.
Yeah, no, 96. I know.
Okay, well, I was there opening night, 96, yeah. Fine. I got the t-shirt. I think I threw it away by now. I had the t-shirt, and if you recall, when they previewed that, they did the first teaser preview for that movie a whole year ahead of time. And back in the 90s, early 90s especially, that was kind of a new thing. I seem to recall that being the first big blockbuster movie that I saw a preview for a whole year in advance.
Yeah.
And the preview blew me away. I could not wait for that movie to come out.
Oh, yeah.
And then the next preview blew me away. I couldn't wait for that movie to come out. And I stood in line at opening night, got the t-shirt on, and then it's like this dumb comedy. And I'm thinking, finally, an awesome, epic, dramatic alien invasion movie that uses all this new CG and it's going to just blow us all away like the previews seem to indicate. And then you get there and it's the first movie I felt like I did with Episode 7, Star Wars, or Star Trek. Star Wars, sorry.
Star Wars, yeah.
Star whatever. And where I was in the theater going, Randy Quaid is so stupid.
Yeah.
Will Smith shouldn't be making jokes right now. Why are they doing this? Why are they doing this?
Well, oh. Jeff Goldblum was doing that must go faster. I'm like, yeah, that was already said in Jurassic Park, dude. So, I mean, even we noticed that. We're like, yeah.
And then the coup de grace with the computer virus at the very end.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, come on. I mean, honestly, the marketers for Independence Day did such a good job of marketing that movie. Well, and they snowed us like you wouldn't believe.
That's the problem. They market it only what. So here's the thing, and you're right about this. And that's interesting because I loved the movie, and I think a lot of my friends, we enjoyed it, but we also really didn't have a whole lot of expectations going into it. And you look back and you go, okay, yeah, it was kind of a cheesy comic relief alien movie or whatever. Now, the new Independence Day that came out 4 years ago, has it been 4 years already? Wow.
Only 4 years? I thought it was longer than that.
Yeah, that one was bad.
Obviously, like, my sense of time is warped.
I want to watch it again, but I mean, I saw it in the theater and I was like, really? That's it? That was pretty bad. But the thing is, though, I can understand this, right? You're coming off of a movie like Alien in, what was that, 1979, and then Aliens in 1986, I think is when that was.
Yeah.
And then those are kind of the alien movies that you grow up with, you're familiar with. And so when you see the Independence Day trailers, you're thinking, it's going to be something like that.
And or it's going to be epic.
Exactly.
The trailers showed giant ships hovering over the White House.
Which is creepy.
Blowing up the White House. Yeah. I mean, like, what more could you ask for in a dramatic intro to an alien invasion film?
Yeah. Again, I still like it, but yeah. I do see where it would be kind of cool to see a movie like that. That is a little bit more
with no humor.
Dramatic. Yeah.
That ends poorly.
Alien and Aliens had humor in it, but it didn't take away from the thrill of it. The, or the, not That's even, I would true. Say even the horror of it.
Aliens, especially Alien. I don't remember much humor, but
there was
Alien,
a little bit.
Yeah, there was a little bit. Parker and Brett. Yeah. But Aliens definitely had some good appropriate level of humor in it.
Yeah. But you know, I think, so here's the thing. I think District 9 was supposed to represent something like that. And that
movie.
Just, oh, I was going to say that movie was absolutely disgusting. I hated that movie.
It was awesome.
Oh, absolutely, with a passion. I watched that movie and was like, that was one of the worst Alien movies I've ever seen. I hated it.
Oh, it's funny. I loved it.
Yeah.
That's so funny. It's human.
And
human.
To me, it was very disgusting. Like, there were some scenes in there that I'm like, I did not want to see that ever.
Yeah, it was gross.
Yeah. But anyway, so to me, that was a failed attempt. You see, this is what I love about co-hosting with you is that we have such differing opinions at times, which is great. Like, I love how people don't agree on things. And as long as we can have a healthy discussion about it and not hate each other for it or get mad at each other, totally. Like, I think it's awesome because we all need these various opinions. Because if I say, oh my gosh, this was the best movie ever, like I've been saying about the show Stargirl, I think it's like, and I'm going to talk about it in a little bit again. And I was like, this is so good. It's one of the best DC shows ever. Well, I'm sure there are people that are watching it going, dude, not even close, man. Like, it's good.
Or there's people like me who, just based on the title of the show alone, is a turnoff to me.
Well,
Stargirl sounds just sounds dumb. And I know that's me being dumb by judging a book by its cover. That's something you should never do. But I'm just admitting my base instinct to you right now.
No, I get it.
The title Stargirl is a turnoff.
It sounds very dumb to me. In fact, it is also a Disney movie. I didn't know that. Thanks, Bentastic. And I was like, and he thought that's what we were talking about was the Disney movie that was created, I don't know, pretty recently. And I looked it up and I went, oh God, I would never watch something like that. But he and his family absolutely loved it and said it was really, really good. And it was really heartwarming. And I thought, oh, okay, well, but see, when I read the description, I thought, heck no. So you're right. It's the immediate reaction.
Is the show and the movie the same character or they're totally different? Okay. Yeah.
No. So just a little background for those of you. And I know a lot of people haven't seen it because my question is who's even watching it? And I know there's a few of us watching it, but even Lord of Thunder is like, yeah, it's really good. So it's a Jeff Johns.
Lord Thunder says it's good. I mean,
exactly.
I might try it.
Jeff Johns, who is one of the most, in my opinion, one of the most recent prolific comic book authors. He has done a lot of the Flash comics. He's responsible for creating the Flash TV show. Unfortunately, some of the control got taken from him. And so the Flash, in its amazing glory in the first couple of seasons, kind of went downhill because he wasn't as involved. Anyway, he's amazing. Jeff Johns himself is amazing. In fact, I would love to have him on the show. He's just one of those guys. You're like, you create amazing content, dude. Every time you have your hands in it, it's awesome. And then when other people get their hands in it, not so awesome. So in the Justice Society of America in the DC Comics, you have Hawkman, Hawkgirl, what is it? Hourman, Dr. Midnight, some of those like characters. There's the Justice League and there's the Justice Society and they kind of all work together and the Flash is in the Justice Society as well. And then there's Starman. And Starman is the one that gets the cosmic staff and it's like basically the star power essentially. Well, in the comics, he dies. And then the person who takes up his mantle is Stargirl. And in the show right now, there's this constantly running question is that is Starman her father or not? We don't know that yet because the show's still airing. And so she's like, well, I want to be called Stargirl. Well, she's a 15-year-old girl. So of course she's going to use that name. And so you might think, wow, that sounds super cheesy. It's like, yeah, but a 15-year-old girl would probably think that's cool. I'm going to be Stargirl instead of Starman. Okay, cool. So it makes sense. But I mean, it's Luke Wilson's in it. Amy Smart's in it. I mean, we talked about this, right? It's just, it's really well done. Jeff Johns created the Stargirl character, period. As a, hey, we need somebody to take up the mantle of Starman because he died. So in the comics, that is. So let's create a new character. He created the new character and now he's created the show for it. So it's just so, so well done. In my opinion, it's well done. And what I like is that it's one of the new DC shows that's not mature rated either. Because some of those, it's like, okay, like Doom Patrol is good, but it's weird. I like it though. But then I really like Titans. But then there are some things that you're like, yeah, I don't want to watch that. Some people may love that stuff. That's fine. Go for it. It's mature rated. I don't like that as much. And then Swamp Thing was amazing, but it got canceled after 10 episodes. And this to me is like, this is amazing and still running. And hopefully they'll keep it going as long as they don't Supergirl it. No offense to those of you who love Supergirl. I know some of you do. I can't watch that show because it drives me crazy. In fact, some people have asked me, well,
just because it's been too agendized, is that?
Yeah. And also, even Miss Ice pointed this out. She said, is Stargirl as girly as Supergirl? And I said, no. And again, that's a generalized comment. So
yeah, it's subjective. I mean,
it is. And to me, the answer is no, because in the first season of Supergirl, there were some things that as a male, I just go, this is definitely geared towards girls. And that's fine. Like, that's your audience. And that's completely what it should be, right? But as a dude, I'm like, just not into it as much.
Yeah.
And then it got agendized. Some people are fine with it. Drove me crazy. As Stargirl, on the other hand, doesn't feel like it's geared just towards women at all. I feel like it's very much a yes, female power geared to women, and yes, also geared to the men. So you guys are both going to like this. And I don't know. I mean, that's me, right? But not everybody's. Yeah. That's what I'm saying, is that having the differing opinions is great, because as much as I love the show right now, guarantee there's somebody out there that's just like, nah. And that's the beauty of our opinion.
And to be fair, I'm admittedly being a little closed-minded about that, because look at Snowpiercer.
Yeah.
Just saying it makes me go, oh, really? Snowpiercer? But yeah, because it's a really good show.
Snowpiercer. Right?
So you really can't judge a book by its cover. You just can't. It's a dumb, instinctive thing that people do, myself included.
It's a hoot and a holler.
And it's a hoot and a holler. No, see, Snowpiercer is a hoot and a holler.
It is. So
but you wouldn't think it would be based on the title. So
you're right. And actually, Snowpiercer is totally like geared towards men, adrenaline rush. At least the TV show is. I don't know about the movie. Oh, yeah, dude. I mean, again, women are going to like it, but it's like...
It's got several strong female characters.
Oh, that's true. But it's definitely it's an adrenaline rush. So you're right. You're right. In fact, I would be curious to know who their target audience is. Sometimes it's interesting to learn about it after you've watched it and say, okay, who are you trying to reach here? I don't know. Well, speaking of hoot and holler, it's been funny. We've been doing so many catchphrases over the years, and we have a lot of fun with it. We've done tell you what a lot, daggum. What was it? Last episode we were doing Know I'm Saying.
Was a hoot and holler.
I love catchphrases, and I think it's funny because so many people get annoyed by them. And sometimes I do too, as a editor producer. I get annoyed by catchphrases because I have to edit them out, because eventually you kind of go, well, this person has no idea that they're saying that all the time. So thin those out a little bit and you're fine. I love using them I'm intentionally trying to overuse them. So hoot and a holler is the one that I think the first time that I really heard, I mean, I've heard this my whole life, but I mean, the first time I really heard this where it stuck was the creators of South Park. And do you remember in the first season, like they'd have the episode and then they would come on at the very end or maybe it was the very beginning of the episode.
It was the DVDs. When the first few seasons of DVDs came out, they would do these little sketches.
Little fireside chats.
At the beginning of each episode.
Yeah. And they'd be sitting by the fireplace with Old Scratch, their dog. And like every time they showed the dog, it would be a different dog.
That's right.
It was like,
I think that was season one, actually. Yeah.
Yeah. And they would zoom in on the guys. And then when they'd zoom back out, it'd be a completely different dog. I mean, clearly. Like one point they had a St. Bernard and they're petting him, and then it would zoom in and then it would zoom out and then it was a Chihuahua. I mean, it was literally that bad. They would always say, isn't that a hoot and holler? All the time they'd say that. And I thought, what a dumb phrase. And where did this come from? And I know you actually were looking for the origin and couldn't find it. We have some other ones though.
Yeah.
And that's okay.
Yeah. So you threw it out there and we're going to do a couple more origins today, but I could not find, now I didn't research for more than a few minutes, but usually when you Google the origin of a saying, you can find it pretty quickly. And I could not find a hoot and holler.
Yeah.
One of the things I found was that something similar to it, like a woot and a holler or whoop and a holler, or it was like referred to as like a short jaunt, like a walk down the street or something like that.
Yeah.
But we're using it in the sense that it's just something like that's hilarious.
Yeah. Or a great time or something. And right, I think that's the intention of it, but it would be fun to know like where did that phrase come from anyway.
Right. Well, I know. Totally.
I heard it again recently from another guy who's been using it more and more, is like, isn't that a hoot and holler? And I'm just like, what a dumb phrase, but it's so funny. So we're going to use it today. Hey, by the way, what's your shower frequency? You know, with the whole quarantine thing, people kind of stopped showering. In fact, I think some people were showering once a month or maybe once a week if they were lucky. Thinking like, what did people start doing?
I have since the quarantine, since this whole thing started in early in the year, I shower every other day.
Okay.
I used to shower every day when I went to work and everything, actually left the house. And I've been working from home for several years, but even then I used to shower every day. But since I don't really go on errands that much anymore and I just don't leave the house very often, my wife does that. I just only shower every other day, but I do shower every other day.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. Because I get greasy.
Yeah, I know. And I think everybody does. Nobody will admit it, but let's be honest, your skin produces oils and those are not necessary. Yes. Well, you know what? So some people would even argue that showering every other day is good because it allows your skin to produce the oils naturally, which is keeps your skin healthier. And
there's a strong argument in that regard. Yes.
So when we were in college, one of our friends said he was going to go on an experiment to not shower as long as he could stand it. And for the first few weeks, I mean, it was nasty. I mean, he smelled so bad. It was disgusting. And he looked terrible. Well, then after about 4 or 5 weeks, he started to look a little better. And he said, I mean, granted, I don't know how true this was because we got to the point where we couldn't be around him anymore. But it was like, after a while, it's like his body started to clean himself. Like eventually say, hey, I gotta do this naturally. My skin is going to whatever. And he said the smell started to go down and everything else. I don't know if I believe him, but we went about 6 weeks, I think.
I have a personal anecdote in that regard. Remember I told you about how I used to go to Burning Man back in 2005, 2006. Well, when we were at, some people bring like portable shower devices with them. And then of course you have to take all your gray water that you use back home with you. You can't dump it. My friend and I, when we went, we didn't bring anything like that. So we went the whole week without showering once. But I was a little nervous about that. I've always been a fairly clean person.
Sure.
But I was very surprised at the end of the week, both times, how we didn't smell half as bad as I expected us to.
Yeah.
I don't know whether it was all the dust on our bodies or the fact that we did use deodorant, we just didn't shower. The ride home, it was quite tolerable. I was very surprised. Our hair was all matted and everything, but we didn't stink.
Yeah. And I've done that back in the days of Boy Scouts and camping. It's like you don't shower for a week. And I don't remember smelling that bad, just more getting annoyed. Like you just kind of feel ugh.
Yeah, I think you have to be French to smell really bad after a week or even a couple of days. When I was in France in 2000, the worst person I've ever smelled ever in my life was a bus driver who took me from like Paris to Mont Saint-Michel on a day trip.
Yeah.
I'll never forget that. That guy reeked of BO.
It was funny. You remember the story?
No offense to any French people out there. No, I'm just kidding.
You remember the story when Blue Thunder, that's a good movie. When Blue Phoenix came on, do you remember he was the first of the Monday interviews that we did when we came back with those Monday interviews? It's been a few months ago now. So when he came on and he brought up the story of the French exchange students that came out when we were in high school.
Yes.
You remember that? So thankfully, Florence that we mentioned did not smell bad. She took showers. She smelled very nice.
No, but most French people smell just fine. Some of the men,
I was going to say,
don't believe in deodorant. That's all.
But there was a big but there. Probably about a third to a half of them smelled terrible. And in fact,
well, that's more than I was going to say.
That's why I was saying, like, this is funny. The guy that stayed with us, of course, he didn't take a shower. In fact, my mom at one point went down and finally said, dude, you got to take a shower. It's been 5 days. Like you have to, you smell so bad. Well, she didn't, she wasn't that mean, but there was this other girl named Fanny. And I think I might've mentioned her on that episode too, but she was the life of the party. She was like the ultimate extrovert. So much fun. Just a wonderful girl. But she would wear tank tops and you could tell she hadn't showered. And it was so bad. I mean, like, she'd raise her arms and you'd be like, oh my gosh. Like, I was like, you got to wear some deodorant, girl. I mean, she was just the coolest person ever, but oh, wow. It was
different cultures, man. Different cultures.
Yeah. And you know what? Nobody cared. But as Americans, we noticed it. It's just kind of like, okay, well, people do it all the time. I mean, I notice it around here, but I'm one of those dudes that just, I have to shower. I love showering every day. Sometimes I'll go and I'll be like, if it's a cool day outside, I didn't work out, I didn't do anything, I'm like, forget it. I'll just do it tomorrow. But usually by that second day, I'm like, I have to shower.
Totally.
I like to smell clean. I like to feel clean. I like to be clean because that is a hoot and holler.
It is. It's a hoot and holler.
It is. Dude, get this. So last week we took the week off. It was nice.
Yeah.
And thank you.
I didn't know what to do with myself last time we were supposed to record.
It's amazing when you take a week off, you realize how much you miss it. And coming back, it's just like, I'm so excited to be back. And finally. I had a couple of you wrote in and said, oh, well, have a good week off. Going to miss you, you know? And I'm like, oh, thanks so much. I appreciate that. So we did take a little time off. It was nice. First time I think Sarah and I have really taken any downtime since Christmas. And I'm not kidding about it. Even over weekends, we really haven't taken much downtime since Christmas. And I know a lot of people, when COVID hit and quarantine hit, like either sadly lost their jobs or like life slowed down for them. Ours like got busier. I don't know what happened, but we never had any downtime during that. In fact, a lot of people said, oh, I imagine you're not doing much right now. And I'm like, quite the opposite. So this was just, oh my gosh, it was crazy. I knew I was getting kind of tired and exhausted from all the work I was doing and not taking much of a break. But towards the end of the week, I realized I had no idea how absolutely burnt out I was. And like, not just tired and like, okay, I need a break, but like, dude, I'm burnt out. Yeah. And coming back even, I'm like, I kind of still am. And that's not good. So I'm like, okay.
Shouldn't admit that, dude.
Oh yeah. Shh, don't say anything.
Don't tell the listeners.
Yeah, no, but I think it's good, man. It's good to be real about this. And I'm not going to do it. Like nothing's changing. I'm just saying I need to take that into account and say, okay, how do I move forward with this in a way that prevents that kind of burnout? Because obviously I allowed it, didn't realize I was allowing it. And so now I need to go forward being a little bit more vigilant.
Yeah.
So I don't know. And actually part of this was we talked through the Enneagram a little bit because I've talked about it on the show, but Sarah's been going through a training through work, which is really cool. And then my parents were like, hey, we'll take the Enneagram and see what we are and stuff. And so we were just, you know, having a fun conversation about it while we were taking the week off. Well,
remember the Enneagram, for those of you who forget, is a personality classification system, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
It is a, yeah. And anyway, what they say is, yeah, it's a personality test. I think it's one of the more accurate ones. The Enneagram people will tell you that it is about 80% accurate, which is actually pretty low. I expected it to be higher.
And is it really a test, or is it more of just a, you know, what you gave me was you read 9 paragraphs and kind of pick the top 3 that describe you?
Yeah.
Is that really all the test is?
No, that's a very different one, but I felt that one was actually a little easier to take.
Okay.
The really extensive one is like, if you pay for the actual Enneagram test through the Enneagram Institute or whatever the heck it is, it's very extensive with a lot of different multiple choice questions. Well, I hate multiple choice questions because they're not always right. They're like, sometimes there is a none of the above or all of the above, and they don't have those answers in there.
Okay. Interesting.
I've taken those before and I go, well, it's semi-accurate. Now, granted, my results in the Enneagram have always been accurate, but it's a guide. It's not there to tell you this is who you are and fit you into a box. Like, of course, none of them are. So it's there to tell you, I was like, hey, maybe this will help you learn a little bit more about who you are, why you do what you do, how to interact with people that have other personality types and get to understand them a little bit better, which to me is brilliant because, yeah, I mean, a lot of people are like, I just don't get that person. Well, yeah, because you're a different personality type and you don't understand how they think. And if you were to understand how they thought, then you'd be able to understand how to interact with them better. Simple. Okay. It's simple to me.
It's in theory. Yeah.
It's very simple to me, but not for everybody. I get it. So if anybody ever wants to go check out the Enneagram, whether you take the test or not, at least you can understand like what we're talking about. But I tested as a type 7, and I've said that on the show before, but that is essentially the kind of person who's like carefree and loves people and extroverted and has a lot of interests and likes happy, positive things and likes to kind of run away from things that cause pain. I mean, it's like, dude, that's me. I mean, come on.
It's described as the enthusiastic visionary, which is you to a T. Yeah.
Yeah. And there was another term for it too, is the epicure, which I thought was also
that's a fancy word.
It is, but it's also very accurate too. So there's that. Now here's my secondary personality type, which actually, what they'll tell you is that you have a primary, you usually have a secondary, but it's usually not nearly as strong as the primary. Now, this one that I gave you says you might even have a tertiary, because a lot of people have a bunch of different, of course, like you're not necessarily just one personality type.
Yeah.
Everybody's complex. So my secondary is actually very, very closely tied to my primary, and it's not a very common combination. And it's the type 8, which is the challenger and the person who hates bullies and stands up against them and like loves to confront others and like very opinionated, very much like this is the way it's got to be, loves justice and hates when justice isn't being served and or when the justice is broken and stuff like that, right? It's totally me. And I'm like, oh my gosh. Well, what's weird is that the type 7 and the type 8 are typically not combined.
They're not compatible, or
it's not even that they're compatible. It's that they're just, it's not a usual, it's not a very common personality combo.
Oh, okay.
And so as a result, I find that, in fact, people have kind of said, dude, you shift personalities really quick. Well, because I go from very happy type 7, everything's great, let's have fun, to holy crap, this person needs to die because they're a jerk.
No.
Not really, though.
You mean, yeah, you mean, holy crap, this person
needs to be thrown in jail.
Doing the wrong thing, and I need to show them why they're doing it wrong or something like that.
That would be the mature response, yes. I gave you the initial reaction, which is not the reaction that I ever want to take, of course, right? Yeah, exactly. But
so
no,
raw, Brian. So I know. Raw.
The type 8 is raw. That's the thing. Well, most type 8s are, guess who's a type 8? Just guess. Like probably the most famous type 8 that everybody hates right now.
Oh, our president?
Yep. President Trump is a type 8, hands down. And people are like, I hate that guy. He says he shouldn't be saying that crap. Well, yeah, because he's a type 8. He has no filter. Well, good type 8s have learned to filter what they say, and he hasn't. So, but he is a type 8, which, by the way, you want type 8s running things as long as they have other personality types to kind of like
leaven the...
Exactly. Like kind of let's balance you just a little bit here. Yeah, that's a good thing. But type 8s are strong. They protect people. So anyway, the point is that when I have a, when you look at a type 7, type 8, it's a very unusual combo. And so I've realized that this show has reflected that a lot. So we're like, hey, we're just having a great time. Let's talk about TV shows and movies and blah, 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 blah. And then all of a sudden I'm like, dude, we need to address this issue because this person pissed me off and blah, blah, blah. And people are like, what the crap, Brian? And I'm like, oh, that's what's going on. Oh my gosh. Well, I understand it. But everyone else is like, I don't know. Why is Brian flipping out over here?
Mr. Hyde, yeah.
No, not like that. Because Jekyll was a cool guy, and Hyde was evil. Evil.
He was nuts. Hyde was crazy.
But anyway, good book, by the way. So yeah, very interesting. And I've really come to understand now why I am so, but you know, okay, here's the other thing. The type 8 in me is necessary and it's good. And I stand up for people and I get people's back and I stand up against injustice and against bullies, and that's all needed. It's all really, really good. But I've also realized that the side that makes me healthier and positive and happier is the type 7. So both are needed. In fact, I've had other people talk to me about that it's a really cool combo. And there are other people out there like that. It's just, it's not a very common one. So the 7 is like what I want to do. The 8 is like sometimes what I need to do, if that makes sense. Mm. Okay. But anyway, very fascinating. And part of that too is like, okay, and this has been very interesting to me, is that the type 7 loves freedom. The freedom to do whatever. And if you look back, look at COVID. COVID has taken our freedom away to do a lot of things, right? Because we're in quarantine. We can't go anywhere. We can't go into stores without masks now. And by the way, I am not saying that our freedoms are being taken from us from a constitutional level, by the way. I'm not going there. I'm not even talking about that. I'm just talking about in general.
Yeah, situationally.
Yes, situationally, pre-COVID, we could do whatever we wanted. And now we can't because we might get sick or we might spread something, right? So that's what I'm talking about. I'm not going down the other path. So that's one thing, right? Well, lack of money and resources prevents you from the freedom to do whatever you want. That just happens, right? I mean, you could go on health issues. You name it. Like something can prevent you from having those freedoms. And that really stifles someone like me with that personality. Right. And it's been hard. In fact, lately I've realized that my best self, the joyful self, has just not been there because I haven't had those freedoms. So that kind of sucks. But one thing is I love experiencing new things. In fact, we talk about that. That's why I joke about the polygamous gaming kind of thing, which is totally not the right term, but it's funny.
That's such a hoot and a holler.
It is a hoot and a holler. You just want to experience what's new, what's next. That's why I love new music and new movies and all that stuff. Or let's go experience a new adventure, try a new food. It's just fun. That's me. So what about you, dude? Tell me about your personality, your primary first.
Okay. I'm pretty hardcore type 9, which is the adaptive peacemaker. When conflict erupts, especially between two people like that are near me, my instinct is to be the diplomat and to try to get those people to stop arguing and come together to find common ground.
Sure.
My biggest shower time rants. You ever take showers, Brian, where you're just like talking about random stuff to yourself or whatever?
Of course.
You're just kind of verbalizing ideas to yourself or whatever.
Yeah.
The most common thing I do in the shower or elsewhere where I verbalize to myself is trying to understand why politics are not more middle of the road, and why it's looked down upon in politics for a candidate who's a Democrat or a Republican who are moderate.
Yeah.
the pundits on either side look down upon them and they try to put them down. And I'm thinking, you idiots, the moderates are the smart ones. They're the ones who are going, okay, well, I see what you're saying and here's what I'm saying and let's come together. Let's meet in the middle. That's the obvious, intelligent resolution, right?
As a type nine, that's obvious to you.
No arguments. Yeah. I mean, you can't even argue that's the obvious resolution because the fact of the matter is we all, I mean, different groups of people have different opinions about things and not everyone's always going to agree, right? I mean, I'm telling you the sky is blue. So,
but you know what? Only I see that too, though. I'm the exact same way and I'm not a type nine, but I can understand. And maybe, well, maybe that's a mature response versus like it's natural and obvious to you, whether maybe it's not as much to me. I don't know.
But where I'm a type nine is where my instinct is to try to bridge that gap between people,
which is good.
I do it at work all the time. And it is a good thing. I'm a hardcore type nine.
That's awesome.
My secondary type is a type five, the quiet specialist / observer. I'm not a doer. I'm a watcher. 100%. I'm not a very aggressive or ambitious person at all. I have very little ambition and I take after my father in that regard. I just want to live a nice, calm, peaceful, comfortable life. And I'm not trying to climb the ladder. I'm not trying to make waves. But I'm always observing other people doing that and making observations to myself. Then my tertiary is the type six, the loyal skeptic, which it was a very distant tertiary. So,
but you are skeptical about things too.
I am. So that's why I picked it as three. The general description of that paragraph that you sent me, only a little bit of it described me. So,
And that's funny. Cause like, that was the same thing for me. Like type seven was like, 100%. Type eight was mostly, and I didn't even mention my tertiary was type four, which I don't remember exactly which one it was because I just don't take that as... That's like the side of me that can be very good, but there's a lot of negative to it. And it's the... I forgot what it's called, but it's the... Basically, it describes like artists and
the intense creative / romantic.
Yes, exactly, right? Well, I'm intensely creative, but there's a little bit of the romantic side, but not very much. But what I've noticed is that with the creative romantic person is that they can easily get... wrapped up in their emotions to the point of depression or discouragement. Oh. And I can get that way. Not often, but it does happen periodically. So it's like, I want to have a hoot and a holler. So I don't really want to embrace that personality very much. Or maybe the good side of it, the intense creativity is awesome, but let's keep it at that.
It says the type fours often feel misunderstood and lonely.
Yeah, definitely.
Et cetera. So
And as a type seven, if you can't hang out with people, then that four comes right out.
And then I feel lonely. You know, I used to be more of a type. I mean, I used to be a little bit of a type four before I got married. And ever since then, I haven't felt misunderstood or lonely since then. So
you're saying your wife brought out the best in you.
Yeah, she very much did. Yes, absolutely. So
do we use her real name or do we use her superhero? Does she even have a superhero name?
No, Susan does not have a superhero name.
Okay. I was just wondering, like, she needs a radio name, but oh well. Well, for now, Susan. Hello. Thanks for listening.
Hi, Susan.
All right. So anyway, well, that's cool. Well, if any of you ever take the fun Enneagram test, let us know which type you are. I think it'd be just fun. And I know some of you may not want to take it, may not care about it, and that's totally fine. But if you're interested, go check it out. There's a bunch of free tests out there. Tell us what you are, what type, you know, or that came out and what you think about it and go from there. It'd be a lot of fun. Dude, I was going to tell you one thing. Dude. So I've seen very few moose, or as I like to say, meese in my life.
Meese.
Yeah, meese like is more meese fun. Too. Yeah, it should be. Like there's a gaggle of geese, right? You don't say there's a lot of goose out there.
Right. Well, some people might. I don't know.
I just got to say there's a lot of meese. Anyway, we've seen meese. And unfortunately, I guess I did see one male moose once. Well, it wasn't Rocky. It might have been Rocky Mountain, but it was like on the western slope. Anyway, and it was like, it was a young kind of moose, whatever, bull moose. But this time, dude, three moose. Three meese. One was a little one and it was drinking water. And it was funny. We were just walking. All of a sudden we were like, oh, hello. Standing right there. Just, you know, it was really cool. Just slurping the water up. It was so funny. But I mean, everyone's like, oh my gosh, meese are mean. And I'm like, if you threaten them, they really are. But I've never, the mom was staring at us the whole time.
Or if they're in a rut.
Yeah, that's true. But the bull moose that we got really close to, we were like, actually we weren't as close to him, but dude, that guy was awesome. Just this huge, beautiful bull moose. Awesome. Oh, so cool. Anyway, good time.
He's like, what's up, guys? What's up?
He's like, hey, what
up? That's my girl.
Yeah,
that's my kid.
Actually, no, the bull moose was all by himself. And then it was a mom and young
I bet
moose.
He's a type four. I bet he feels
he's like
unappreciated and misunderstood. Yeah.
I'm all alone. But interestingly enough, and I don't see these a lot, but I guess with less humans around, we saw two snakes just chilling. Like literally walked up and I'm standing not 2 feet away from these guys. And I'm just like, what? Like never see snakes.
What kind of snake?
Well, I don't know. That's the question. One of them I think was a grass or garter. And then the other one,
you can pick them up.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to pick up the other one, but I think he was a bull snake. And I'm not sure though, because I don't know if bull snakes are native to Colorado, but definitely not a rattler, but it was the size of a rattler. Definitely not a rattler though. But I mean, I wanted to pick him up so badly. I'm like, and you know, he kept shaking his head at us. I'm like, okay. He doesn't want us to pick him up.
Yeah. You gotta be careful picking up garter. I don't know about bull snakes. I've never touched one of those, but they're awesome. Garter snakes, they're so adorable, but they do pee on you when you get, they release this musky liquid onto you if you pick them up. It's a defense mechanism. Okay. So,
well, bull snakes. So when I was in fourth grade, I had a teacher who had a lot of amazing reptiles in his classroom. I mean, he had this like rare lizard from one of the Asian countries that was huge. It was like the size of an iguana, but it wasn't an iguana. And then he had a bull snake and I used to sit next to them for some reason. That's where my chair was. And so he'd allow us to take the snakes out and we put the bull snake around our necks and stuff. And it was just like one of the friendliest snakes because the snake would come up and literally like kiss you on the cheek.
And
it's weird. I mean, I know they're smelling and sensing, but they're also, they become very attached to you and very friendly. And I know some people absolutely despise snakes and they're probably absolutely freaking out right now.
Yeah.
I get it. I hate spiders. And I knew people who had pet tarantulas and pet scorpions and I thought they were insane. But I love my snakes and it was really fun to see them. And it's funny. It's like, it's just a snake, but for some reason, like you hear them a lot. Because they're in the bushes near you, but they're never just sunning themselves out on the sidewalks because there's too many people usually. And right now there's not. Yeah. So it was really cool. Anyway, cool snakes. Anyway, I love
snakes. Cool
story,
bro.
Yeah. And meese.
Hoot and holler.
Snakes and meese. Hoot and a holler, man. Hey, speaking of hoot and holler, you have two other origins though that I want you to share really quickly. Since we couldn't find hoot and holler, no worries. You've got some other really good ones here.
I got more.
And especially here, this one is great with gorillas.
Wait, which one?
The first one.
Resting on laurels.
Gorillas do it all the time. You actually say that. Gorillas are over there resting on their laurels.
Well, so the idea of resting on your laurels dates back to leaders and athletic stars of ancient Greece, believe it or not. Now, let me start over because resting on your laurels is typically, what does it mean? It's been used to describe those who are overly satisfied with past triumphs just satisfied with what they've done. If what's his butt from the Patriots, Tom Brady... If Tom Brady had retired after he'd won so many Super Bowl rings, or more apropos, if Michael Jordan had retired immediately after his finals ring or trophy or whatever, he would have been said to have been resting on his laurels.
Sure.
Okay. So again, back to what I was saying, it dates back to leaders and athletic stars of ancient Greece. And in Hellenic times, Hellenic times were what? 5th to 2nd century BC, something like that around there, around the Peloponnesian Wars, whatever.
I have no idea. Okay. Yeah.
And I could be a couple centuries off. Anyway, it's BC. In Hellenic times, laurel leaves were closely tied to Apollo, the god of music, prophecy, and poetry. And Apollo was usually depicted with a crown of laurel leaves. And the plant, the laurel plant, usually eventually became a symbol of status and achievement. Hmm. Victorious athletes at the ancient Pythian Games, which, by the way, always took place 2 years after the Olympic Games. And they took place in the city of Delphi, in the temple of Apollo.
Okay.
So they were like a sub-Olympic game in ancient Greece. Those athletes who participated, victorious athletes in those games received wreaths made of laurel branches. The Romans later adopted the practice and presented wreaths to generals who won important battles. That's why we always see, when we think of Caesar, the stereotypical image of Julius Caesar, he has those laurels on his head. Mm-hmm. Pita pita, right? So the venerable Greeks and Romans, or laureates, they called them, were thus able to rest on their laurels, quote unquote, by basking in the glory of past achievements. Only later did the phrase take on a negative connotation, sort of negative. Mm-hmm. And since the 1800s, it has been used to describe those who are overly satisfied with past triumphs.
Interesting. And you know what's so weird is that, I mean, it makes total sense that laurels are basically branches, leaves, or whatever they are, like some...
Yeah. A sprig.
Yeah, it's a sprig of, anyway, yes. So they're making the wreath. Like, it makes that, it makes sense that that's exactly what that is. But for some reason, when I first heard that term, I was always thinking, like, you're resting on your laurels, like you're sitting on your butt or whatever. It's like your arm. Or it, I always thought it was like referring to a body part of some kind originally. And even though I know what a laurel is, it's like for some reason those two never connected.
Right.
And so, yeah, hearing this, I'm like, oh, yeah, that makes a lot more sense. Interesting.
Right. I get that. So the next one is reading the riot act.
Oh,
we've all heard this, right?
Oh yeah.
Where, you stayed out past curfew. Your parents are going to read you the riot act tomorrow. So these days, angry parents might threaten to read the riot act to their unruly children. But in the 18th century England, the riot act, with capital R, capital A, was a very real document. And it was often recited aloud to angry mobs. Instituted in 1715, the Riot Act gave the British government the authority to label any group of more than 12 people a threat to peace.
Oh.
Interesting. Yeah. In these circumstances, a public official would read a small portion of the Riot Act and order the people to disperse themselves and peaceably depart their habitations. Anyone that remained after 1 hour after they read the Riot Act was subject to arrest or removal by force. Then the law was later put to the test in 1819 during the infamous Peterloo Massacre. I've never heard of this. I assume if you're in the UK, you may have heard of this, in which a cavalry unit attacked a large group of protesters after they appealed to ignore a reading of the Riot Act. Hmm. So, yeah, that's where that came from.
So I wonder if the Riot Act has been read recently. I don't know.
The Riot Act, but
maybe a version of it.
There might be some application of that, right?
Sure,
with all the protests going on lately and whatnot. But luckily in this country, we do not have a riot act, at least that I'm aware of, or anything similar. Maybe.
Well, hopefully not the same, because this one's pretty severe.
But, yeah.
Well,
or not,
I mean,
yet, at least.
Subject to arrest, I guess, is not severe, but removal by forces.
But that's being done.
Yeah, well,
but,
true. Interesting.
So it's interesting. Yeah. So that one's a little apropos, right? I mean,
it is. Well, thanks for sharing those. That's pretty cool.
That was a hoot and holler.
It was a hoot and holler. And I love understanding these origins. By the way, any of you who are like, oh my gosh, I say this all the time, send it to us so we can find the history of it to make sure that you're using it correctly.
Yeah, please.
Mm.
Not to find out if you're using it correctly, more to educate you on where it came from.
Well, that too. Yes, absolutely.
And ourselves at the same time,
by the way. True, because we could be saying things that we're like, do we really even know what that means or where it came
from? And
or,
most of the time, the answer is absolutely not.
Exactly. So. I know. Ugh, it's too bad. Maybe hoot and holler is like really bad right now. Like it could mean really bad things. And we're just like, hey, isn't that a hoot and holler? Oh, yes, it is. No, actually, guys, it's really not. It's terrible. I have no idea. Dude, I watched Artemis Fowl.
What is Artemis Fowl?
So I saw the preview for this, I don't know, sometime last year. I know that it is a book series, a young adult book series, sort of like a Harry Potter genre-ish.
Is it about a duck?
No.
Named Artemis.
No.
It should be.
Yeah, I know. It's So, I mean, it's not exactly the same genre as like Harry Potter, but it's along those fantasy young adult kind of stuff.
Well, to be fair, Harry Potter, I'm sorry to interrupt again, but Harry Potter is not about a person with a lot of hair that pots plants, right?
Well, that's true.
So where am I coming from?
I don't know. I'm totally lost now. No, I'm just kidding.
Sorry, I didn't mean to derail that train.
That's okay.
Go ahead.
Well, which train is that? That is the Hogwarts Express that you just derailed.
No, I think it's the Snowpiercer, but go ahead.
Oh, dang it. All right. Well, Artemis Fowl. So it came to Disney Plus. It was supposed to be in the theater, but of course theaters aren't open. So it came to Disney Plus instead. Now, I was very excited about this movie because of previews, going back to what you said about marketers and how they promote things. It really looked amazing. And I've heard from people who have read the books that the book series is absolutely brilliant and really magical. And so totally should be fun, right? Well, here's the thing. I enjoyed it for the pure fact that it was fun. It was light. It was happy. And it was not heavy, 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 intense, because, dude, let's be honest. I'm tired of this. I've been tired of it for years, but especially with everything going on in real life right now, I don't want more heavy, intense stuff. Like, it's just, dude. So for that reason alone, I had a really fun time with the movie. It was happy, left you with a smile, and you're just like, ah, okay. Now, on to the criticism. It was not a good movie at all. And that's sad to me too, because all the stuff I heard about it, the premise of it, I thought, this is going to be amazing. And again, the book series is super famous, super popular. Well, I didn't know because I haven't read the books, so I didn't really know what was actually going to happen or what the background was, but I think they're assuming that the books, because I still have no idea what the story was mostly about.
Interesting. Huh.
Now there's like, okay, yeah. And I'm not going to give anything away, but I can say, okay, well, yeah, this happened and this happened, but it's kind of like, that's it. Is that all the story that there was? Because it didn't feel like the story was really there. It felt massively lacking. But again, if you've read the books, you might be like, oh, well, I totally understand what's going on. I don't know. Well, I do know that some of the reviews I've read and heard that those who have read the books hated this movie, absolutely hated it. Said this was a poor, poor representation and did not even come close to capturing the magic and the beauty of the books or the story.
Kind of like Mortal Engines, in my opinion. The books are so good and the movie was very mediocre, but go ahead.
And you're right. It was mediocre. In fact, I remember like, it was so funny. Somebody talked about that. And I said, oh yeah, I did see that. And it had only been like 2 months that I'd seen it. And I forgot all about it because it was so unremarkable to me.
Right.
So it was sad because I love this genre and I love this premise, but to me, it just, there was no magic. There was magic, but it was not magical to me at all. And it's kind of like Aragon. I know that's an older movie now. It came out in 2006, but the books were phenomenal. I don't know if you've ever read the Aragon series, but again, young adult, it's very Lord of the Rings style genre, but with dragons and other things. And oh my gosh, like I read all four of those books and I don't finish books very often. And I finished those like ravenously. I loved them. Mm. They were that good. Well, the movie was not even close. It kind of told the story, but it really destroyed the magic of the books. So same kind of thing, right?
Isn't that funny? That happens so often in Hollywood. I mean, it's endemic. It happens all the time where they take a really good book and they make a movie. They attempt to make a movie out of it. And somehow the screenplay and the directing and the production, I mean, all of it, sometimes you wonder why did they even just release that movie? I mean, surely the group of them making the movie had to realize that it wasn't even sort of doing the books justice. So why do we continue doing this?
And that's what I don't
understand.
Isn't
that weird?
Yeah. And it makes no sense to me because you have a story that is already written.
There's and it's book. Already esteemed. I mean, yes. It's already beloved by millions or whatever. So
why would you change it? I mean, okay, now here's the thing. I've said this about the comic books turned into TV shows. Some of them have said, in fact, even Geoff Johns himself says this, I don't want the show to be like the comic books. I'm going to write a new story. Mm. Well, that's fair, but he wrote the book, so he can write a new story. He's capable of that. But when you're saying this is called, I mean, I don't mind if they're going to write, like to me, Ready Player One was different enough from the book that it was like almost reading a new story or watching a new story. And I still loved, like the book was phenomenal. And to me, the movie was great. But it was different enough. It wasn't like they were trying to hold up to the book or do something so different that it just sucked, right? But you look at Lord of the Rings and yeah, sure. They can't even come close to the detail that the books had, but they had 4-hour movies with the extended cuts and they were amazing.
Yeah, they couldn't come close to the detail of story, but the detail that they put into those movie making, I've never seen anything like it before or since, ever.
Yeah, and so that's my point.
Ridiculous.
You can do that. And so why did they take a book that's below? I mean, they did it with Harry Potter too. I mean, again, they didn't even come close to the detail of the book, but they did a pretty dang good job and people loved those movies, right?
Yeah.
So why can't they take a book like Artemis Fowl that is good and say, let's do that with this movie to the best of our ability? Why do you have to change it and dumb it down so much? Like, and to me, like the best part of the movie was the CGI. And once again, this goes back to what do they think people want? They want flashy, eye candy, beautiful CGI graphics and everything like that. I know that's redundant, but some people don't know what CGI means. They want that. And so it's like,
But
it's no story. Like, I don't know what's going on. And by the way, there was like no character development. I mean, it was almost zero. And I'm like,
God, that sounds so much like another series I've talked so much about recently that's super popular and I'm not going to go on about it again. That sounds just like that. You just described it to a T.
The character development in that series that you're talking about was far better than this.
Oh, that makes this really, really, really bad then. That's terrible.
From a character development, yes. That's the thing. Like, you really, truly do not understand Artemis Fowl, the main character, at all. It's really poor job of developing him. Dame Judi Dench was in it, who was one of my favorite actresses.
So bad for her.
And she did a fine job, but even then, her character was two-dimensional. And
Dang.
Colin Farrell was in it. He's awesome.
Well, he's a has-been. He's a has-been.
Yeah, I know, but he's two-dimensional. And
I used to like Colin Farrell.
Josh Gad was in it, and he's awesome. And again, kind of a two-dimensional character. So it was just like, and well, by the way, the sidekick girl who's the fairy, I was like, want to like her? Don't know her. Don't know anything about her. Is she cool? I don't know. She's not, she's just nothing. She's like a cardboard.
Sounds like they just kind of threw you into the universe and expected you to swim.
Yeah. So, I mean, I got to be honest. I'm like highly disappointed because, again, I had fun with the movie, but I wanted so much more because I've heard there was so much more. So, I don't know. I was bummed, man, because I was like, dang it. This is a magical concept and yeah. No pun intended because it really does involve magic, but it's so cool. The music was great. So is it worth watching? Sure. But go into it with like zero expectations and you'll probably have a fun time. But if you've read the books, you're probably going to hate it. I don't know. Maybe not. Maybe you're going to be like, oh, whatever, it was fine. Who knows? But you've seen it. I'm curious because I know a lot of you have Disney Plus. So if you've seen this, let me know what you thought of the movie and if you are of the same opinion or not. And if you're not of the same opinion, that's great. I want to hear your thoughts. Now, on the other side of things...
Oh, I was just going to bring something up very briefly. Speaking of shallow movies with no plot, I finally saw The Meg.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm just going to say one thing about it. Very colorful eye candy.
Yeah,
while
once
they were
again.
Underwater.
Once again.
But that's a movie that they, I mean, they didn't have any source material to go by.
No.
And they were clearly going for the lowest denomination on that movie, a denominator, whatever. They weren't going for an intellectual, even semi developed script on that. So it was just a new Jaws for a new generation with better colors. That's all it was.
Or Deep Blue Sea.
Yeah.
If you ever saw
and it. Jaws, yeah. By the way, I feel awful comparing the two because Jaws is and was
brilliant.
And forevermore will brilliant. Be a masterful classic by Steven Spielberg. So yeah.
What it's funny because I mean when we wanted to see The Meg, I expect it's Jason Statham. I'm like, it's not gonna be it's not gonna have a great story to it.
Jason Statham.
What I was really hoping though is that that guy is a martial arts king. He's amazing, yeah. Right? I was really hoping he didn't have any martial arts. Like his character didn't know martial arts. I was so bummed. I'm like expecting him in the water to be like, oh, I'm going to kick you. Boom. And like kick him right in the face.
Yeah.
Even though
like,
he probably
like
get eaten,
but
it would be
so fun.
Some kind
of kung fu on the shark.
Yeah. That would have been awesome.
Can we talk like Jason Statham the rest of the episode?
It kind of hurts the voice.
Yeah, I don't know. He does it, quite frankly.
That's a hoot and a holler, but that's his name. I love Jason Statham normally, though. And honestly, like The Transporter was such an underrated, brilliant movie. It's an action flick with, actually, that does have a pretty good story to it.
Yeah, Transporter, yeah.
Two and three don't, but I'm telling you, man, The Meg was just like, it was just popcorn, man. Just go and have a popcorn flick. Yeah. It was not supposed to be a great. Now, that's on the other hand, a great movie. We've only just started it because it's 2.5 hours, was Just Mercy. It's got Jamie Foxx in it. It's got, what's his name? Is it Michael B. Jordan? Is that his name? Because like I'm thinking Michael Jordan and I actually think that is his actual name. And that's why I always get-
But with a B.
Not the Michael Jordan basketball player, the Michael Jordan, the actor. It's a true story. A Harvard graduate lawyer decides to go down to one of the southern states, and I'm actually forgetting which state it was, to basically fight for the wrongly accused or those who are on death row that may or may not have actually done what they did. It finally came out to video. So it's like, all right, I'm finally going to watch it. Not because of everything that's been going on, but because I've been desiring to see it in the first place. And it is amazing so far.
Oh, okay.
Now it is a little tough to get through. It is a racially charged movie, true story, not in a way that'll frustrate. Well, it'll frustrate you. Like, why do people treat black people like this?
Or people in general that are different or look different. Than
exactly.
Them. Yeah.
Why do people bully, period? That's really what it comes down to.
Insecurity.
And you're right. It really is. In fact, there's a very interesting J.P. Sears video that he put out called Police Brutality Training.
Oh, I saw you link that in Discord. Yeah.
Well,
I haven't watched it yet.
You know, as J.P., anybody who heard his interview here on the show, J.P. is funny, right? Well, the first part of that video is hilarious and wrong at the same time. And then the second part of the video is very emotional, very difficult to watch. I agree with most of it. There's one thing he says in there that I absolutely disagree with, by the way, which I'm not going to talk about on the show. But one thing in the very beginning of the show is he's joking, right? This is his typical humor. And he's mocking this, right? But he's talking about how, well, we're going to teach you to beat people for no reason. We're going to teach you to, if somebody doesn't look like you, you should treat them, you know, with disdain and violence. And like, obviously, it's tongue in cheek.
Right.
But he does actually say in there that the reason why you should do this is because you are insecure. You're a coward. You have fear. You have problems. And that's just who you are. So you should take out those fear and problems on someone else because you should project that on them. And I just thought, okay, he's being funny, but that is so true.
Right.
Anybody that bullies another person is insecure, has problems that they've unfortunately had. I mean, if you look at a lot of people who bully others, if you were to go back and look at their family life, or maybe somebody bullied them or somebody hurt them in their past, that's why they're doing it. It's not like somebody that has a great family life and healthy childhood grows up and just starts bullying people. Like, why would
they do
that?
Unless they're a sociopath. They do exist.
Well, that's true. But most of the time, in fact, if I could get the psychologists that listen to the show to speak up on this one, I would love some statistics on this.
Yeah,
and please. I know you're listening, so please let me know.
We like that stuff.
Yeah, let me know what statistics they are, but I would like to know what percentage of people that truly bully others have had some kind of hurt happen to them in their younger life, or multiple hurts.
I'm guessing it's a very high percentage, but that's just me guessing based on...
Well, true, we don't know.
Very distant, data. So
My guess would be it's in the 90 percentile. Somewhere in there. I mean, that's my guess, right? But so my point is you're right. Like, they're bullying because they're insecure. Anyway, so it's hard for me to watch this movie as a type 8 personality as well, because I get so angry. And then it causes me, like, I get all like adrenalized, and I'm like, but at the same time, I'm going, okay, well, this is a good reminder for me that stand up against the bullies, like I said earlier in the show, and don't be a bully. Even if it's like, because sometimes I think we all bully unintentionally or even unknowingly, because we're possibly selfish people. We want what we want, right? So we might do it. I don't know.
Yeah.
But not
even the best of us might do it passive aggressively sometimes.
Yeah. So anyway, highly recommend Just Mercy. Great movie. Now, I wanted to briefly share this and then we'll move on. We'll kind of wrap up. But a couple of weeks ago, I was going to share this on the show and we just didn't have time. So I wanted to share really quick. I've been playing Magic the Gathering and Magic Arena and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I've been having a lot of fun with it and stuff like that. Well, I've been trying to build decks, and I know that's kind of one of the beauties of Magic, is that you get a bunch of cards and then you put them all together and you find some good synergy and find out how they work. And then that's how you create powerful stuff. Well, I'm not very good at that. And I think I know this because I realize that, like, for example, as a musician, it's easier for me to arrange someone else's already created song and even sometimes improve on it or augment it, but it's a lot more difficult for me to like compose a song and create it from scratch. Uh-huh. So like, for example, Trans-Siberian Orchestra, famous Christmas rock music. We performed that once and we did a really good job with it. The arrangement of it was amazing. We've taken some other songs and we've changed it and made it even better. But when I come to compose something, it's just not as good. So I think it's the same thing with Magic, is that if somebody has already built a deck, I can take that, I can learn it, and I can make it better or make it like work for me personally based on my play style. But to create a deck from scratch, oh my gosh, I kind of suck at that.
So, it takes practice, dude. It's an art and it takes practice.
It does, but it's also really, really challenging for me to do that. That's also why I'm like really good at learning music by ear as well versus like trying to play it off of sheet music, because I don't know how it sounds.
Yeah,
I
mean, that makes sense. Yeah.
So to me, what's been really fun is that going into Arena, if somebody builds a deck, they can literally copy paste the deck. So they can share it. What you do is you say export, it shares it in like a text format. You literally copy it and you import it into Arena and it just, boom, you got the deck there. And then you might have some cards, you might not. And if you don't have those cards, you can use your wild cards to finish the deck or whatever. But what's been really fun is kind of watching how these decks work and trying to figure them out. And then, like I said, improving them and realizing like, well, I like this play style better than this play style, or I like this color better than this color when it comes to certain decks. So what's been really fun is I'm starting to see more success. So like in the beginning, I was winning like 1 out of 20 games and I was getting kind of frustrated. Then I was winning like 2 to 4 games. And then one night I won 9 games out of maybe 15, maybe less. And I just thought, dude, I'm finally like winning and having fun and getting better at this and collecting cards now because I'm winning. So it's been a lot of fun to do, but good. I wanted to share that because it's been a blast. I really am enjoying Arena, and I like paper too, but Arena's faster. It's just kind of like boom, 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 have some fun.
Yeah.
So
it's like the next evolution of paper Magic. I mean, it just is.
Paper's still really fun. Hopefully we can all get together and start playing paper again in a safe manner. But the webcam magic, that's still effective, but Arena's been great too. So good times. Dude, it's good to be back. It is.
It is.
Happy Independence Day, July 4th for all you Statesians. And for those of you in other countries, I don't know, go have a barbecue. Homemade ice cream is another piece of history for 4th of July.
As long as there's no poop in it.
Deep Thoughts with Captain Influence.
If I were to walk a mile in someone else's shoes, I just hope their shoes don't stink. Smelly shoes are the worst.
You know what the music means.
Oh, yeah.
Well, Captain, thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Oh, thank you, dude. I'm glad to be back. It's been a nice vacation.
Yeah. Appreciate you joining us and listening too. And appreciate Miss Ice's lovely voice right there. Hopefully we'll hear more of her here soon and we can talk Last Dance. But anyway, have a great weekend. Great 4th of July and a great week. And we will see you next Friday. Real Brian Show is signing off.
The Real Brian Show is a production of 514 Media at 514mediaempire.com.